when we dig into texts, you can come to the same text, you've been to it 10 times before, and another time it's something completely new. And I haven't been in this particular area of this text probably in since 99, 2000. So I mean, wow, like I don't even know what it's going to look like being that I'm like coming into it again. But it says, okay, now I shall expound the chapter on the treatment of vata vyadi. Vyadi means disease, so it's the diseases of vata, as propounded by Lord Atreya. And it says, Vayu is life, strength, and sustainer of creatures. Vayu is the entire world. It is the master of all. And it feels like either I'm remembering it too well or I'm lying, because it wasn't that long ago that I read that verse. The person whose Vayu is with unimpeded movements and in a normal state lives long for 100 years devoid of disorders. You just missed the secret to live long without any disorders.
What?
Nobody tell her. No, she just walked in. My humor. I love that Robbie loves my humor. I love it. I wish my wife loved my humor that much, Robbie. I'd have a good life, you know? I don't get any of my jokes laughed at, you know? All right. So Vayu's life, strength, and the sustainer of creatures. It's the entire world, the master of all. The persons whose Vayu, meaning the movement of their prana, is unimpeded. So the movement of the prana is unimpeded. And in a normal state, lives long for 100 years devoid of any disorders. What's he saying there? I mean, basically, like, you get the vata under control and you're good. The Vayu is of 5 types. Prana, Udana, Samana, Vyana, and Apana. It coordinates the body well while moving unimpededly in different places. Prana is located in the head, the chest, the throat, the tongue, the mouth, and the nose. So we're looking at this kind of zone, right? Functions are spitting. Spitting is prana? Did you know that? Spitting? Sneezing, belching, respiration and digestion, etc. Udana is located in the navel, the chest, and the throat. Speech, effort, energy, strength, complexion. Samana Vayu is located in the channels, carrying sweat. Well, what's that mean? It's located in the channels, carrying sweat. So it's like coming out of the pores of our skin. Doshas and water, fluid, and seated beside the digestive fire provide strength to Agni. So Samana Prana is generally considered the fanning. It's the prana that feeds the digestive fire. But I never heard it's can in I never heard. I mean, I've read it before, but like carrying the sweat, and the channels carrying the sweat. What? So that's you know how when you put the oil on you and you digest it. So it's the Samana Prana that's digesting it, even in the skin, not just in the stomach. Vyana Vayu. Being quick moving, pervades the entire body and performs the functions of movement, extension, contraction, and blinking. So the fact that we go out or in or what, all that kind of stuff, it's all Vyana. So the hide, you know, that cover up like response, that's Vyana, and the hey, how are you? That's Vyana too. Interesting. Okay, next it says testicles, urinary bladder, penis, navel, thighs, groins, anus. These are the seats of Apana Vayu. Testicles, urinary bladder, urethra, navel, thighs and groins and anus. It releases semen, urine, feces, menses, and the fetus while situated in the intestines. They all in equilibrium and located in their places perform their normal functions by which the body is sustained free from disorders. Let's see. If they move on the wrong path or in an unbalanced, they afflict the body with disorders relating to their location and functions and take away life shortly. Although the disorders caused by vata are innumerable, the important ones such as nail cracking, 80 in number, have been mentioned in Sutrasthana, chapter 20. Now they are being said in other words, taking vayu as the whole according to locations and covering the etiology and treatment. All right. So, let's see. Does anybody know where Dr. Ladd breaks down the vayus into the elements? No? Well, somewhere he does. Do I have that in volume 2? Yeah, here it is. Let's see.
Are you reading volume 2 right now?
No, this is Charaka Samhita. All right, here it is. So he associates prana with ether, udana with air, samana with fire, apana with earth, and vyana with water. Vyana with water. And so if we wanted to connect them to the planets, we connect them through the elements that they're associated with. So apana is here saying earth. So that would say it's connected to Mercury, but apana is definitely Saturn. So I guess we can't use his elements that he uses. Because he has udana as air, and no, that's not gonna... Oh well. not through that system. Saturn messes up the apana prana. He does. All right. Let's see. Shrotas, no, those are the prana vayu. There's five vayus. There's five types of prana. Five primary types of prana. So that's what those were. Those are the five primary types of prana that are looked at and treated in Ayurveda. And the big thing with the prana vayus, the vayus or the five pranas, are they are the intersection between Ayurveda and yoga. So yoga chikitsa is all about the five vayus. And when we're doing yoga asana, each asana is affecting the vayus in different ways. So certain asana make the prana go up, and certain, like for example, balancing asana. She can also sit on the other side here. Balancing asana, where you stand on one leg and you're balancing, they work with vyana. Like this, chest opening poses are working with udana. So mula bandha is working with apana. So like this, yoga chikitsa is the realm where the Ayurveda and the yoga are weaving together and being effective. And for us, as Jyotishis, we can, we're going to use the prana vayus as well, but not to the same level, because they're going more into the, more into the physical movement of the body and the body's reaction and functioning on that level. Right. So today we are doing Panchanga. Panchanga. How's everybody doing?
Excellent.
Yeah? So has everybody looked at the there's a free calendar online that you can print and see what the tithi and nakshatra are for the day, and just to be following that, is everybody tapping into that a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have mine. I really just look at the nakshatra.
Oh, you gotta look at the tithy too.
Well, that too, but the other things don't. I don't know.
The other things aren't gonna be important for just your daily activities. Okay. They're gonna be more important for if like somebody's building a house or getting married, or you know those big more important events. For your daily planning, Tithi, Nakshatra, and Vara. So those three you're going to be using on a regular basis. And the days of the week, I mean, we are any calendar has them. But, all right. So, flaws in time. Now, Ian, you said you did the Tattva doshas?
Yeah, it came up when we were discussing Vara and Tithi, and okay. So I said, let's go to there because it just explains something that we were talking about earlier.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So Amavasya. So first, somebody tell me, what's Amavasya? So in the calendar, you can see when it starts and when it ends, but what is Amavasya?
Wrong time. To be born.
It's always the perfect time to be born. For whatever you're going to suffer, it's the perfect time to be born. If you that way. Amavasya, how do I define Amavasya? Not birth on an Amavasya, but what is Amavasya?
Parents?
Not what to do, but what is it? How do I know the day is Amavasya?
S14?
S14 is the day before Amavasya.
S15.
S15 is Amavasya. So, no, not S. K. K15 is Amavasya. But what does K15 mean?
It's the last 12 degrees. So 360.
Last 12 degrees before...
Syzygy,
conjunction of the sun and the moon. And now when you look at a calendar, it says on a normal like Western calendar, it'll say new moon at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. What's that mean relative to Amavasya?
Is that the moment where it's beyond time? That exact moment?
Forget about the moment beyond time. I'm taught we're technical here, you know? It says 3 o'clock. Just for example, if it says new moon at 3 p.m., where's Amavasya in that, relative to that?
Sun and moon are conjunct.
When?
3 o'clock.
At 3 o'clock. So that time on the calendar... is when it says new moon, that means that's the conjunction. That's what they list on the calendar. And that's what the Western astronomers call new moon, that moment of conjunction. So when you look at a calendar, that's the conjunction. Now Amavasya is does it start or end there?
Ends there.
It ends there. So that's the important thing for us to be clear of. So Amavasya is approximately the 23 hours before that conjunction. And I say approximately because sometimes the Tithi is only 22 hours, sometimes it's 25 hours. But the average, if you average all the Tithis together, it's about 23 something. So we'll just say 23 for ease, but just know that it changes because the moon... she's so changeable. Alright, so Amavasya is that zone just before the conjunction. Now what's happening to the moon in that 12 degrees that it's moving towards conjunction?
Darker and darker.
It's getting darker and darker and darker. And what's happening to our consciousness?
It's getting darker.
Not exactly. Darker wouldn't be the right wording. The moon's getting darker, but what's that look like inside of us?
Pessimistic?
There will be a little pessimism there. But more than that.
Does it make us a magnet for not a magnet, but more receptive to evil energies? Or?
There's definitely more evil energies. But why are there more evil energies?
There's more space for them.
We're going more inward at that time. The consciousness is retreating into itself.
And the foundation of consciousness is disappearing. So the mind and the container of mind is becoming very thin. And so those who are evil, all those things that hold them back are disappearing. So if somebody's not evil, they're not going to start getting evil on an Amavasya. But somebody who has these negative things in them, there's not that light to make them behave. They lose that container. The mind becomes very thin. Now, from a meditative perspective, is that a good or a bad thing?
Good. More receptive.
More receptive to what?
Well, if you're meditating at the time of the new moon, not so much because you're allowing your... If you have that thin veil, then negativity's coming in.
Why it is better? It's we have profound meditations on the dark moon, but why? What's happening that makes our meditations profound?
By going inside, you're finding your internal light.
Exactly, the mind. What's the mind do? The mind's all about looking outside and eating the senses and looking at things, and participating in the world. So at that time, that outward energy goes away. And we can really turn our mind inside and focus on that interior being. So for internal work and internal meditation connecting to your core self, Amavasya is really powerful. Now, is it the best for going out and being social? Why not?
Because what we're talking about, the darkness, it's just like more confusion and just like crazier things can happen, I guess. Like just not the light to illuminate your communications and relationships. And you're kind of too fragile you're in a more fragile state to be out and about.
I'll agree with that one. But there's more to it. But it's correct.
You're more susceptible to outside influences.
Very much so. Very much so. That's true. What else?
It's a time of inward energy, whereas the full moon's outward, social.
Go deeper.
So you're putting yourself in the opposite environment where you would want to be if it's a moon.
Exactly. The full moon, the brightness of the moon is people. Moon's so social, right? So the more bright the moon, the more social the energy is. The darker the moon, the less social. So you can force yourself to be social during that time, but it's a forcing. And just for the recording and everybody who's not seeing, Dan asks, any recommended books about tithis? And Ravi replies, Jyotish Fundamentals, My Master's Words by Visti Larson. And Visti is my senior guru brother. So his book is same tradition as I teach. So we were talking about Amavasya there. So Amavasya, it's going in, what happens if somebody opens, some people, they're like, oh, it's the new moon, we're going to open our company, we're going to open our store on the new moon, yay! And it's not new moon, it's actually still that dark moon. But they're not differentiating the fact of the difference between before that 3 p.m. point and after the 3 p.m. point. Because before that 3 p.m., it's getting darker and darker and darker, and that's the energy. So now what happens when somebody opens their business on that Amavasya?
Unsuccessful.
Why? How is it unsuccessful, based on everything we just said?
There's just not enough energy there.
Not enough energy, and that not enough energy does what to the business?
There's not enough light to attract people because the brighter the moon, the more social.
Exactly. So there's not the energy in the business to attract people into the business. So businesses that open during that time, they end up closing because they're not getting enough customers. So it's the worst. if you want to open up a retreat that's just going to be you, right? Great time, sure, but definitely don't open. You can turn that. You can just hold the power button down if you're chilly. Well, just you can turn it the because yeah, we're, it's 6 o'clock, so it shouldn't be too hot now. All right, so we've understood Amavasya. So the moment now, I have an article on my website that goes, and even in here, I think, depending on. Is this version? In here, I even call the Amavasya the new moon because, you know, this was written in 2006 and I just was translating it like everybody else. And after deep reflection, we really can't call Amavasya the new moon. We have to call Amavasya the dark moon. And so I wrote a whole article on differentiating that. But if we look in the dictionary, it'll translate Amavasya as new moon. And so I've been working to really, you know, change our nomenclature there. And not just use the 1879 version of Monier Williams, who didn't differentiate Amavasya from Pratima. Now, Pratima means the first, the beginning. So it's the first tithi. It's like the new moon. That's like the new tithi. So the new moon is actually the 12 degrees after that conjunction point. And so if somebody is starting a new business, hopefully they at least landed on that tithi and not the Amavasya. But I still wouldn't pick that tithi to open a business. You know, I'd wait till there's like lots of light in the moon and then open the business. All right. So now somebody gets born on this Amavasya. And based on everything we just talked about, what do you think?
Darkness in the mind.
Darkness in the mind? But is everybody born on Amavasya have darkness in the mind?
I mean, I guess I would say yes.
Nah, it's not that simple.
So many factors. So
yeah? Dig in.
The other variables in yes. What nakshatra?
Okay, but
maybe
what,
if moon was in its own sign, it might help. But in general, wouldn't it indicate that the consciousness is, or maybe they're more spiritual because there's less of that.
It has the potential. It has the potential to make them very spiritual people. That's a definite. So that's a positive nature of the Amavasya, being born on an Amavasya.
I'd say that I probably have more struggles socially or like with other people, connections.
Sounds good. So the moon also shows just our family. It shows our nurturing and our environment. And I'd say 80%. And I'm just going to make that number up, but that's the about. Of people born on Amavasya, their parents, after they're born, suffer financially. And in the house, there's a sense of lack. And so the people born on Amavasya, they're suffering from lack, from not enough conscious, from that consciousness of not enough, there's not enough. Not enough money, not enough food, not enough, you know. So Amavasya... people, they suffer from that thought process. And in order for the mind to enter that space, there has to be lack in the home when they're growing up. Now,
so
there's
I have a question,
yeah.
Freedom. Diwali is a black moon,
uh-huh.
and my sister-in-law was born on Diwali, and it's considered in India to be highly auspicious time to be born. And it's, they say that Lakshmi is in the home, and looking at my sister's family, my sister-in-law's family, it doesn't seem like their family was lacking in any way. They seem quite affluent, and she's always celebrated as someone born on Diwali, which is Black Moon. So why?
So as I said, 80%. 80% of the time. And all of these things have cancellations and things going on in the chart that'll cancel it out. Gaji Keshari has the potential to cancel out the dosha. Now, Diwali is basically, the concept is similar to in America, April 15th, when your taxes are due. And so on that day, you've paid your taxes, and you can celebrate, and the new financial year has begun. That's the tradition that Diwali comes from.
I thought that was the day. So from my understanding, right, uh-huh. the day that I was born is called Dhanteras,
mm-hmm.
which is the 13th tithi before the Amavasya,
mm-hmm.
which is the day of Mahalakshmi Puja, which that day all of the businessmen do their pujas and their books, and they put all of their business books and do puja to their books on that day.
Mm-hmm.
So also when I was born, I was told that I'm very lucky because I was born on the day of Lakshmi Puja on Dhanteras, which is the 13th day before the new moon. So I don't know, this is just...
And it varies in which area of India. Sometimes it's a 3-day tradition, sometimes it's a 4-day tradition, other places it's a 1-day tradition. And so different groups will celebrate it slightly differently. But that puja to Lakshmi of all the financial books, it's basically the April 15th that we have in America. And
there must be an esoteric reason as to why they've chosen that day to do that as well. Like, if and why is it in the Indian culture that those born on those days are celebrated to bring in abundance into the household? And people celebrate people born on that day.
The reason behind that is it's the new moon of Libra.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the reasoning behind it. But the Amavasya dosha, this is textual. This isn't some rumor that these people are good or negative. This is scriptural. And this is the listing of the puja and the mantras to do for somebody born on that day, born on the Amavasya. So the whether somebody says it's lucky or not lucky, there's no text that says it's lucky to be born on Amavasya.
Okay.
Just for you know, the difference between colloquial sayings and scripture. One of the issues that we find with Amavasya is And do I talk about it here, how they have regular losses? I just mentioned the parents. So often people born on Amavasya will have situations where they can make a lot of money. Two years ago, there was one client, and he would make about somewhere between 100 to 160,000 a pop in these different deals he did. So he was making lots of money, but then he'd have deals where he'd lose that much money at the same time. So, you know, he's like making huge amounts, and he's like losing huge amounts. And you know, I talked to him. He's like, yeah, I make lots of money, but like, and I said, yeah, but you lose lots of money too, so you have none. And he said, yeah. And you know, he had some good things. He had bought a house, and the house was staying stable, but the finances just weren't building. And so I told him, I said, well, you know, you have Amavasya, there's this puja to kind of stabilize that. And he said, okay, I'll do it. Whatever it is, you know, I'll do it. And so normal Amavasya puja, you can say, is going to be around $500 to $1,000, something in that, for a person to do an Amavasya puja. It's a full day puja, and there's little bits of gold and silver that are part of it and all that. And he said, no, I want everything done exactly. So he spent about $5,000 on his puja. And he made the images out of gold and silver, and he got the rubies, and you know, he did the full thing. The day he set the puja, you know, with that intention, he got a letter from he had a whole bunch of student loans. His student loans were forgiven. Oh. The day he started like applying for that puja. So what kind of omen is that, huh?
Good.
So the thing is, like, even though he spent $5,000, he just saved, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in that student loan forgiveness. That's one thing that we see with this Amavasya. So if we have a friend who their child has an Amavasya birth, we want to have them do the puja for the baby to protect their own finances. If we meet somebody, and we can sit, you know, we ask, because we don't just make them do an Amavasya puja. We say, hey, so how are the finances, you know? And if somebody says, ah, I'm rich, I keep making more and more money, ah. And they're that 20% that it's, you know, there's a cancellation happening. And if they sit there and they tell you about their financial struggles, you know they need this puja. All right. So, if a person can't afford the puja, we recommend they worship the goddess Kali to help stabilize things. Let's see, and then the Vedic mantra here. Apayaswa same tute vishwata soma vrishniyam bhavava jasya sangate. Grow to fullness, Soma. May you gather strength from everywhere, focusing on success and prosperity. All right.
My ex has a son, he's born in Amavasya, and it's combust with his son, and he can't hold on to money at all.
Can't hold on to money at all, huh? Mohorta Chintamani. Oh, where's Mohorta Chintamani?
I wonder if the girl was a child when he was born, because I think it's...
I had a photo shoot a while ago. My books were so organized I could find everything. And then I had a photo shoot, and so we rearranged some of them because what was going to be in the photos and what wasn't. And now it makes me suffer when I look for my Jyotish books. Everything was in chronological order, so I just needed to know when the book was written and I could find it. Mohorta Chintamani.
Freedom, so yes. The moon is past the sun.
Yes, degrees.
Yeah, does that make it not Amavasya?
It makes it not Amavasya anymore.
Even if it's same degree, different minutes, if it's fire.
Yeah, then it's officially past. Huh?
I guess he might be okay, because I think his moon's a couple minutes.
Oh, it's still, that's a tough moment to be born.
So
you know?
The moon is 1938 and the sun is 1923.
Right. So it's past.
It is.
So he's in Pratima. So it's past, but he's still in, you could say he's still in the gap. Mm-hmm. Oh, there it is. Mohorta Chintamani. All right. Mohorta Chintamani. Let's see. determining the mouth and tail of Bhadra, living in the effects of Bhadra, things which should not be done, in the combust stages of Jupiter and Venus, termination of the defects arising out of Jupiter in Leo. You know, Jupiter is unlucky in Leo. Did you guys know that?
Right.
Look at me.
He's an extreme gen.
Var Parvati, method of knowing the Kalahora, Tithis. Rule in regard of wearing clothes on the day which is to be rejected. Effects when new clothes is... Oh. So it says, when a new pair of clothes gets burned, torn, or muddy, the clothing is divided into nine parts, and then it is to be imagined that there are gods in the four corners, demons in the three parts and middle, and men in the remainder. Okay, that's getting complex. Whoa. There. So you get a stain on your shirt. How to interpret what it means? Muhurta in regard for planting trees. There's something in here on Amavasya. That's our next one. Oh my goodness, it's talking about voodoo dolls here. Auspicious and inauspicious times to burn your voodoo doll. Why am I not finding it right now? Okay. This is all it is here? 57. Birth of a child. Tithikshaya. So here we're reading in Muhurta Chintamani, the inauspicious time for the birth of a child. Birth of a child occurring in Gandanta, in the nakshatra of Jyeshta, in the yogas of Shula, Mahapata, Parigraha, we don't go into that, in when the tithi is Kshaya, on a Sankranti, on Amavasya, and that of Kuha, the Amavasya on which the moon is not visible, in the Vajra Yoga, and on Chaturdashi, or the 14th Tithi of Krishna Paksha, or the dark half of the month. Okay, that's all that says. I was just following, there's a link to be added to the next, whenever I redo the book to make the next version there. Matra Mahodadi, what is that from? Matra. All right. So we can see this is coming from the Muhurta texts as well. And in there, notice we talked about Amavasya, and we flipped the page here, and it also mentioned the 14th day. So this is the day before Amavasya, which is what? What degrees of the moon from the sun?
380.
Because it's going to be 0 degrees is the conjunction.
The circle is 360.
So if we, so Amavasya, we take 12 back. So that's 368. 358, right? Not 58, 48. Right? So 360 minus 12.
348.
And then we minus another 12. So 336 to 348. That, so the moon that far from the sun, or if we were looking at the chart to take it backwards, 24 degrees to 12 degrees away before conjunction with the sun. That's going to give us Krishna Chaturdashi, the 14th Tithi. And of course you can look and it tells you on the screen too, you know, but when we're looking at a chart, we see that the moon is getting close, we want to check and make sure that we're not in this. Does that make sense to you? You're giving me a funny look.
Kind of. For some reason, I'm having trouble with these numbers.
Numbers. Mm-hmm. So, you did the calculation proper on her ex's chart.
Well,
it was passed. Then the moon was passed in degrees, right?
Sure.
Now, what if the moon is 5 degrees before the sun?
Then that would be Amavasya.
Exactly. What if it's 14 degrees before the sun?
Then that would be Chaturdashi.
Yes. So okay. What's the funny?
Well, the 360.
We're taking it from the sun going all the way around this way.
Ah, gotcha. All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
I'm like, what?
Did everybody follow that? Dan, if the moon is 20 degrees before the sun, what tithi is it?
It's the one before Amavasya.
Okay. K14. Yeah. Krishna Chaturdashi. Let's see here. Now, this one, if we look in the scriptures, we divide that tithi in half, and when you look at the tithi, it says how many degrees are left, right? I heard while I was driving the other day, somebody was asking about what that percent means. And in general, we're not going to go into that, but the scripture gives us the difference here. So, If it's in the first 16%, for Jagannath Hora, it gives us what's left. So the first, so with that, the first 16 is up to 84% left. There's no dosha. Got that?
Yeah, like on the charts, is that, for example, it says 46.9
left.
Yeah. That's where we're.
But we're not. We're going to take it backwards from this because this is how much is to go.
Okay.
This is how much it's gone through. So 0 to 16%. That first 0 to 16% of the tithi, there's no dosha.
Okay.
So that's when it says left instead of how much is gone. If you look at Sri Jyoti Star says how much is gone, how much has passed,
mm-hmm.
Where this says how much is left. So you have to subtract to get that right, to find out where we are in here. So one gives early death of the father, one early death of the mother, one ruin of the maternal uncle, destruction of the family, and that last little section, that last 16%, says downfall of the self and loss of wealth. So that last 16%, it's basically giving Amavasya results. When it says early death of the father or mother, it doesn't actually mean that they might die. It can often give a break in the marriage of the parents, though, and show that the person goes to live with one parent over the other. Okay, I think we need to hit that. Yeah, it's starting to get warm.
Okay.
And then when you start getting cold, just turn it off.
Okay.
So just regulate us. The result of this will normally happen, and is it not written here? Nope. Around age 8. So this will indicate, you know, if it says loss of father, it can indicate that the parents separate and sometime before the age of 8, and the person will go live with the mother. So it's destruction of father. They lose that connection to their father. Or vice versa, they lose the connection to their mother. I had one chart once where the guy had this dosha, and he didn't meet his father till he was age 8.
Interesting.
So it kind of did this like little bit backwards thing, but what to do, you know. As far as remedy, the indication is Shiva Puja. And when you recommend somebody to get the puja, you tell them to go to the priest and ask for Krishna Chaturdashi Shiva Puja. And if they have a doubt, you tell them, look in Brihat Parashahura Shastra in the chapter on it. And it gives the full puja listed. So now in Muhurta, when we're looking at our calendar, this is the unfaithful tithi. This is the tithi where if an old boyfriend calls you, he doesn't have the best intentions.
Like so if he called you on that day, you're saying?
If he called you on that, if you haven't talked to him in you know, almost a year, and he calls you on a Krishna Chaturdashi, it's clear what he wants. And, I once had a female friend who, she had no clue what this tithi was, but she called me every Krishna Chaturdashi without fail. And I remember once my phone was ringing and my first wife, she was an astrologer, and she says, I know who that is, and she said her name. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She says, it's Krishna Chaturdashi. And I looked, and it's her, and I'm like, oh my gosh. Oh, but we know that person's intentions, you know, like based on this.
Let's
see. And so that compared to Amavasya. So we have this unfaithful tithi, and then the next day is Amavasya. And Amavasya, as far as Muhurta goes, is a dishonest tithi. So avoid contracts on that day. Avoid anything that the person is going to be engaged in long term, because the chance of there being a dishonest situation is very high on Amavasya. So don't trust people on the sexual level on Krishna Chaturdashi, and don't trust their honesty on Amavasya. And if they make a promise on Amavasya, you know they're lying through their teeth. And the thing is, the crazy thing is they might not even know they're lying. You know, they're like, oh, I promised I'm going to do it. And they might mean it, but they actually won't do it. So, you know, you might even know more than that, more the result than they will if they're making a promise or something. But bottom line is we don't want our clients signing contracts on either of those days. People born during Krishna Chaturdashi, they also in the realm of relationship will suffer from situations of either themselves or their spouse being unfaithful. So we know that dynamic is going to be present. And unless there's a yoga in the chart that says, nope, 100% faithful, then that might counteract the K14. But otherwise we want to be careful. And if you see somebody and the husband has K14 or the wife has K14 and they say, I think my husband has a lover at the office, it's not a think, you know, it's like, well, you've figured it out, huh? And it's becomes a matter of how do we clean up the situation.
Do you tell them that?
It depends on the situation, you know. This is where there's what the chart tells us, and then there's what we do with it. Mm-hmm. Now, if that person, and this is where, you know, personal belief comes into the picture. And you get these extremes. So you get like in India, the culture is you don't talk about a person's sex life. So if they're having a love affair at the office, you don't talk about that. They're having a love affair at the office. Shut up. Like, you don't mention it. Like, it's just not to be mentioned. whatever, that's their thing. You don't even think about it, you know? Here we put, like, somebody's cheating on somebody, it's all over the news, it's in the tabloids, it's big pictures, it's a big discussion. Is he gonna leave him? Is she not gonna leave him? Like, you know. And then you have this other side of the spectrum where they talk about it and they don't care. So you have the whole gamut. And now you have the situation where you fall somewhere in that belief system, and they fall somewhere in the belief system. And if you tell them, yes, it's the most likely happening, yes, they're like, should I hire a private investigator? I really would. They hire a private investigator, they find out, what's it going to do for them? They leave their spouse and then leave, and then they have to sell the house and the kids are split, and it becomes this terrible situation where there's lots of suffering. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Depends on what you're suffering more from.
And that's so we get into all these ideological things here.
Or maybe you just guide them to listen to their intuition, since they brought up the question to begin with. Then maybe just confirm to them, not necessarily either or, but maybe question them as to, well, intuitively there must be a reason that you're feeling that, and guide them to listen to themselves, maybe, instead of, you know.
Now, so we have the potential to say yes, guide them to that, and then we run into the situation where the next week they call you because they did catch the person cheating. And then what do?
And you say that your intuition was right.
And then they're like, am I going to leave him? Is he going to do it again? Is like, and what do you say?
Well, how do you feel? Because I find that, like, the astrology itself, right, it's just confirming stuff for us that we already know. And if we wouldn't be coming to the astrologer at that point in time with those questions, if there wasn't something there, and the astrology just reflects the nature of it being there at that time. So basically, I could be wrong, but whatever's happening, there is no mistake. You know, it's all happening and all reflected.
No mistake, but are they going to leave their spouse or not?
I don't know. I guess we'd have to look at their chart and their spouse's chart and see, you know, if it's something that can be remedied, or if it's something that is just going to be there, and whether or not they're willing to put up with that or not in their lives.
What's our goal?
To help people to know themselves better and to make appropriate decisions in which to further their lives.
Yes.
Cleanse the karmic palate.
Help transform.
Oh, no, our goal is not to cleanse the karmic palate. No.
Isn't that...
Let's go back to chapter 2. What's our goals?
To help bring more light and awareness into people's lives.
Uh-huh. And Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha.
Dharma.
And what's Dharma mean?
One's purpose.
So they're living their purpose. Now, what their spouse is doing when they're at the office or whatever, that's not impeding their purpose. Does it impede their moksha?
It might.
Maybe. Yeah.
If they're attached, yes.
If they're attached, but attachment is what? Is attachment moksha?
No, but it impedes moksha.
No. There's no impeding of moksha what someone else is doing. Moksha is all you.
But if you're attached to what someone's doing, then that's an impediment to your liberation.
If you're attached, that's an impediment.
Yeah.
What they do is not the impediment. Your attachment is the impediment.
Right.
So then we go to Artha. Is it hurting Artha?
Her work?
Probably, but it depends on the situation.
It depends on the situation. And so that's what we have to evaluate, is what's happening to Artha there. Is this hurting the Artha? Are these people suffering, and is it taking the money away? Is it wasting the money that should be with the family? Is this person gambling and sleeping around and wasting the money? So we're taking that into account. And that's going to help us make decision. Dharma, moksha, that's not going to help us make the decision. We're going to look at the artha situation, and then we move to kama. And so where
does it's definitely affecting the kama situation.
And all I can say is, from the realm of Jyotish, we have to look at kama on a much bigger picture, because kama is the whole family. Kama is your enjoyment of life. So you share a house with somebody, you have kids with them, there's this whole unit, you go playing on vacations together, there's social events, you go and you enjoy with them. So if a person leaves their spouse because that spouse is sleeping with whoever at the office, or however it's going, and it destroys the whole family unit, and you were part of destroying that family unit, did you just support negative karma or positive karma?
It depends.
Depends on what?
On the rest
of
the course.
You aren't a part of that.
Oh, you're part of it. You're giving them advice. At this moment, at that moment when that person comes to you, you can save a marriage or break a marriage.
Isn't it to help guide the person to the wisest decision that's good for them?
Yeah.
Like,
and is
so maybe breaking the marriage is
a family, is destroying a family?
Maybe that is. Maybe that's part of their destiny.
And what would make destroying a family a good thing?
Because maybe the husband's like a wastoid, gambling, cheating jerk, and it would be better for her to move on, and for her kids to have a better role model in life.
What if the husband just happened to be lonely, and so he has this special friend that he hangs out with after work?
Well, maybe just advise them all the time to like get counseling, and then it's not your karma anymore.
I'm just digging deep into this because it's not an easy answer. There is no simple answer. It's not leave him, or leave her. It's not stay together no matter what. We really have to evaluate the situation, and we have to give weight. When we look at kama, we're looking at the whole family unit. If it is a gambling, no good, wasteful, whatever, then okay, maybe it might be better. And if it's been friction anyway, and that's just kind of the death toll. But one of the things that I pride myself on, especially when I go hang out with in the psychology circles, is when I'm in my office, I save about one marriage a week.
Nice.
So I put it to about 42 marriages a year that I save.
But won't the chart also show that? Like, won't the chart show if there's divorce?
Chart can show anything, and we have the ability to mitigate what's going on and do remedies. So the thing is, there's in this community, there's people that come in, the husband has been sleeping with the massage therapist. And he got a new massage therapist and he thought he could sleep with her too, and then she told the wife. And then, they want to separate, and you say, hey, you have a talk and you guys got a house and two kids and maybe there's a way to work this out, and you talk and you find a way to make it work. Another situation, woman is late 50s, something like that, maybe even 60, and she married a guy who's 15 years younger than her, and he's cheating for the fourth time on somebody, and this time he's saying he doesn't want to give her up. And the other times they got into a fight and he said, okay, I'll break up with her. This time he's saying, no, I'm keeping her. And she says, okay, well, we're breaking up then. And so I see her in the office and I say, listen, it's the fourth time. What was wrong the last few times? You're happy. You're half the year in India doing your spiritual stuff. Like, what do you care what he does? You know, So you know, and so the marriage was saved in that way. She said, "Okay, you mean I just gotta accept this?" I said, "You can accept it. You cannot accept it. But tell me, is it worth not accepting and then trying to split everything when you're in your 60s and?" And you know, what, you want to start dating now? He comes home every night, you guys have a fun life together, you go on vacations together. This is life. And so, you know, in the outside world, there's this whole concept of right and wrong. We're not looking on the outside, we're in the inside. We're in what actually happens. Now, another situation, man, I had a client back, it was 2004, and he was so depressed. I mean, most depressed guy, I gave him this remedy and that remedy, and he just kept me, you know, the depression was just there, and I finally had him start doing this one sadhana. He started doing the sadhana, and he upped and left his wife for the woman that he had on the side. He didn't tell me he had a woman on the side. I didn't look to see if he had a woman on the side. But he was suffering in his marriage. And the woman on the side, that he was able, the mantra to get rid of his depression made him leave his marriage. So there's a million different ways that it all takes. And our goal is not to prejudge. We're not going to get prejudice. What's going on? What's best? How do we make this work? What's going to be best for family? You know, there's realms where if you go to Nepal, there'll be women that have four husbands. One of the things, there's not enough women in Nepal. And so what they do is, like, I'm one of three brothers. If we lived in Nepal, we probably would have all married the same woman. That's how they do it there, you know? You know, and it's really popular these days in India for men to have a second wife. And now in Turkey, they say that with all the Syrian refugees, all the men are getting second wives because the Syrian refugee women want, you know, they want to be married because, and they have no home, they have nothing. So they're all like quickly marrying in and everybody, every man in Turkey is getting a nice second wife. And so the world, you know, we can't prejudge. We can't say this is right and this is wrong. And our goal is to make sure that people are happy and that things are working. And sometimes we have to break down barriers in people's brains, and other times we have to help them build some boundaries. But if you can save a marriage, that's a good, that's karma points right there. All right, that's what Krishna Chaturdashi brings out for us. But it's not an easy line, right? All right, topic change. Eka Nakshatra Dosha. And so if you guys listen to the recording, who's the most famous Eka Nakshatra Dosha?
George W.
I don't think I need to go in. This is relatively simplistic, right? Makes sense? Any questions on this one?
Doesn't Ian have
Eka
Nakshatra Dosha?
Because
he's a twin.
Yep, he sure does. But Ian, you're the oldest twin, right?
I am, yeah.
So it's your younger brother that has the dosha.
Funny thing is, he had three job prospects lined up, this month we were living in Seattle at the same time,
so
relatively close to each other. As soon as I moved to Portland, two of them fall out.
So as soon as you separated, the loss. Yeah.
This isn't the first time, you know, we've lived apart, but it's interesting that almost every time that pans out. So.
Do you both live here now?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
He just moved to Portland.
Oh, you live in Portland. Oh, okay. I see. Yeah.
And so they were living near each other, but then he just left his brother and they, you know. All right. And so I'm going to be quick because I'm going to leave and Ian is going to teach the beginning of the Arudapada chapter. And if you have time, just kick that Arudapada chapter out of the water, Ian. And I can do Argala next week. Sankranti Dosha, any questions on that one? Somebody born on Sankranti Dosha, it's important to worship Shiva. Women born on Sankranti Dosha have a very hard time getting married. Mrityunjaya is the primary mantra for that one. Pujas recommend it. Grahana Dosha. Born on an eclipse. That's on an eclipse. To be born just before an eclipse is actually... and it's tough. It's considered powerful. Is it good luck? That's... you know... Would you say that Donald Trump has good luck? You know, it's like...
He probably would.
He would, yes. So you know what I mean? And that's how being born before an eclipse works. They don't care about you. It's good for them.
And that's either Rahu or Ketu with either the sun or the moon, yes?
Yes. In an eclipse, on an Amavasya or a new moon.
So it depends on the exact degrees to be considered that as well, and not just the same.
You can Google the date and look on NASA, and it either is or it isn't an eclipse.
But meaning Amavasya specifically, not just in the same... house together.
So solar eclipses happen on Amavasya and lunar eclipses happen on Purnima. Only. So if Rahu or Ketu are conjunct the sun or the moon and it's Amavasya Purnima, then you need to check and see if there's an eclipse. Gandanta Dosha. You know, one of the things that makes me happy is when I have a student that says, and Elliot, do you, any of you know Elliot? He's living in India now and in Sanskrit University. And I remember the day he said to me, he said, you know, after talking to somebody, I can just tell when they have a Gandanta Dosha. And oh, I'm proud. That's what makes me proud, you know? Gandanta Dosha gives this instability. A person, you know, is always changing. Things are changing all the time. There's this lack of being grounded and constant shifting and changing happening in the person's life. All right. So we got the Panchanga doshas. I'm going to run. I'm going to leave. Can I leave you with my key?
Sure.
And I'm going to be, is that at the Stone House?
Yeah, I think so.
It's at the Stone House. So I'm going to run over to the Stone House for the next hour. And give me a text and I'll meet you for my keys.
Okay.
And when you're done, all you got to do is just shut this.
Okay.
And it'll, should I leave the recording on? I'll, no.